show.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Teach Me to Talk with Laura and Kate. I'm Laura Mize, pediatric speech pathologist.
And I'm Kate Hensler, developmental interventionist. How are you tonight, Miss Laura?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing just fine, thank you.
That's not what we said right before the show, is it? We won't tell the truth tonight, though. Tonight we'll fake it really great.
Yes,
how about
we're
that?
We're doing great. And you know what? At the end of the hour, I know we'll both be doing better. So there you go.
There you go. Well, welcome to show 129.
Okay.
It will be okay. Somehow it always is.
That's right.
Show 129, and tonight we're talking about the power of a social game, and then we have a funny story, or what I hope will be a funny story, for therapists who have the same job that we do, which is working in our state early intervention program and doing home visits. And that can just be a whole different work experience for our therapist friends who maybe listen, who don't see kids at home. And I can always tell a crowd at a conference who actually, when the crowd is full of people who do home visits, Kate, because they get the jokes and they laugh at the same things that we laugh at and think are funny. And so I had a blast in West Virginia on Thursday, because it's a big state early intervention program, and most of the people there, you know, sometimes I get audiences that are kind of half and half. Half of them will be clinic-based or school-based, and the other half home-based. And then when we went to Tennessee, hardly anybody did home visits. So they would kind of chuckle at the stories, but it's just not the same when you've lived it,
right,
and breathed it. And so Thursday was a blast. It'll go down in my, you know, top favorite conferences ever, because the energy was there and it was a room full of really funny on women, and so just had a great time. I hope we made some new friends, and a lot of people already listened to the podcast there. Several people asked me about you. I know you don't
you
like to think that people really
tell
listen
me that. You know that. I like
Johnny said, be sure to tell Kate. Be sure to tell Kate on air.
Yeah. He knows me well enough to know. I don't like to think that people, real-life human beings are actually listening, but oh well.
You know, and a lot of people really do download it, and women were telling Johnny what they did when they listened to the podcast. And the favorite ones are always they exercise, which, again, neither you nor I are regular exercisers. I think I can still say that with confidence. Every few months I decide I'm going to do it again, and that lasts for, a week or two. And
yeah.
I don't know, you might exercise more. You walk your dogs.
Yeah, for they're old, we make it about a block. I did walk the Anchorage Trail last weekend for 2 miles, and walked with my husband, who you know is very tall, and he has a long gait. And I kept saying, it's kind of fast. And then by the end, he told me that I needed to imagine that I was shopping so that my energy level would be higher and I could go a little faster.
Pretend you're in Dillard's.
That's right. Pretend you're shopping, honey. I know you'll go a little faster. Oh, well, anyway, no.
Well, and we both have husbands that exercise more than we do, so that's pretty funny with trying to keep up like that. I know Johnny's a fast walker.
Yeah, well.
Well, anyway, it's that, and then driving between, especially therapists who have long drives between visits. That's another popular one. They'll listen to it in the car between therapy visits, especially if they have like a 20 or 30-minute drive. So hello to all of you who are driving. Thank you
driving
for listening.
Driving and exercising. Yeah, we can relate to one of those anyway.
Yes, absolutely. So that was fun to hear people talk about that. And Johnny gets to overhear more than I do, and people would say, well, what is the show about? And one lady said, they just talk therapy. That's all they do every week. They just talk therapy. They just talk about what we do and how we do it and what works and what doesn't work. And Johnny heard her say, and they're funny. They're really funny. And so that kind of cracks me up, too, because sometimes it does seem like you and I are the only people here, and we're just saying things because I know you'll think it's funny, and you know I'll think it's funny, and we'll both laugh and then pretend like we're just on a regular phone call. So that was kind of cool to hear somebody else's assessment of that. So.
Well, that's nice.
There you go.
I hope they continue to enjoy it.
I hope so, too. So that was really fun, and I want to announce my next conferences. Dallas is on Wednesday, October 19th. Oh, shoot, I've got to look. Shreveport, Louisiana, October 21st, which is a Friday. New Orleans is on Thursday, October 27th. Lafayette, Louisiana, Friday, October 28th. And then I did finally firm up Indianapolis for November 3rd, and that's going to be at, the Hilton North. So I had gotten some emails about where that one is, so hopefully that will fill up, and I'll have a good day there. I know, so it will be an exciting fall. Not quite as busy and crazy as last fall, but lots of fun places to go and people to meet and people to see. All right, I want to also talk about what I put on TeachMeToTalk.com's Facebook page, because there are a couple things I wanted to mention, and I've gotten a couple of emails from people telling me, or people told me in Charleston on Thursday, that they like the articles that I've been adding on Facebook, that they can copy those and give those to parents, and one person said she gives them to other people, that other therapists that she thinks might need to read a little bit and get a little more help, which gave me a snicker.
Yeah, I'm going to say, well, that's probably a good idea.
Yeah. I hope I don't get one.
I know. Oh, my goodness. All right. One is it's called The 10 Ways We Misunderstand Children, and it's from naturalchild.org. And it starts out, we ask an infant to keep quiet. We ask a 2-year-old to sit still. We ask a 4-year-old to clean his room. In all of these situations, we are the ones being unrealistic. We set ourselves up for disappointment and set up the child for repeated frustration. And that immediately captured my interest, because what do we say to 2-year-olds in therapy all the time? Sit down and listen. Mm-hmm. Sit down and right here, stay, quit being so busy, instead of embracing their need to move and need to play. And even typically developing 2-year-olds cannot sit for a whole hour. So I thought that was really cool. And it talks a lot about parenting issues with thinking that our children are purposefully trying to manipulate us by not sleeping or not eating. So I thought it was a great, great article. So check that out on the Facebook page for TeachMeToTalk.com. And then two other things that are on there. One is from U.S. News and World Report. Kate, did you see the article in the last week that said SpongeBob is too much for young minds?
No, I didn't.
Well, it's more confirmation that young children should not be watching TV, excessively viewing TV, and that it leaves kids kind of brain dead, and they can't plan or solve problems as quickly as children who are not exposed to that highly visual content. And we see that all the time with toddlers with developmental delays. When they're watching TV, they go into a trance. They don't know anything else going on around them. They totally check out and tune out. And it just, again, was more confirmation that the recommendation that we make to parents all the time about reducing or eliminating TV is a good idea and a good recommendation. So that is on there. And it really railed on SpongeBob and those cartoony-like shows that move really, really fast and don't give kids a break. And they did, in this study, compare it to slower-paced children's programming. And that slower-paced programming didn't have all the negative effects on kids that the faster-paced, non-reality-based things did. So that was interesting. Maybe our friends will want to check that out.
Right. I need to look at that.
Yeah, it reminds me of our SpongeBob kids. We've called certain kids SpongeBob kids before.
Right.
They're really hooked on SpongeBob. So I thought about my little friends who've loved SpongeBob in the past. Then the next thing that's on there is kind of a do-it-yourself project to make bean bags. And everybody knows that's listened to the show or know me in real life that I am not very crafty. You are the crafty one on this show, not me, but this talks about how to make some bean bags, and you can do them in clear Ziploc bags, which I'm a big fan of any size, and how to put little toys in there among the beans so that it looks like a little I Spy kind of toy. So I thought that was really cool.
That is cute.
It's a cute idea, and I think that might be it on the Facebook page. So before we get going with our email question that we meant to do last week, or really it's not a question, it's a follow-up to a mom's email. Do you have anything to share before we get going with that?
No, not really. Just to encourage anybody who's actually listening live, not driving or exercising, sitting at home, to give us a call this evening. We love live callers. We don't get them as much as we'd like to, but we love when we get them. And the number is 1-718-766-4332.
Very good. And I am manning the switchboard tonight, so occasionally I will need to look down to see if we have a caller.
Okay.
Instead of diverting my attention to something else. Like reading the email that we're going to do. We were supposed to do this one last week. We had two scheduled for the show, and surprise, surprise, we only got through one of those. And so tonight I'm hoping we get all the way through our agenda, but we shall see. Okay, this is from a mom named Jo. Remember earlier in the summer, Kate, when she wrote us? She wrote us originally in May, the very beginning of the summer. And we read her original letter on the podcast and gave her lots and lots of ideas. And just for refreshing our memories, she had two non-identical twins. They were 21 months old at that time. They weren't premature or anything. One twin was doing a little bit better than the other twin. And so we gave her some advice, especially about engaging one of the little boys who was not really interested in playing with her, didn't have a good social response, didn't really seek her out or respond too much, really just wanted to do his own thing. So we addressed lots of our recommendations and ideas and things that we would try to working with him. Do you remember that show?
I do.
Okay.
Believe I do, anyway.
Yeah. Well, she sent us a follow-up, which is so nice because most of the time we don't hear back from people who we've had that we've read their ideas, or we might hear back immediately that they're saying, thank you so much for doing that. Those are great ideas. But then we don't ever hear what happened. And so it's so nice for this mom to follow up with that. She said, I just wanted to drop you an email to say thank you. I emailed you about our 20-month-old twins and how Nathan wasn't talking and struggled to imitate basic sounds. Well, I got your DVDs and book, and wow, your comment that a child who isn't interested in people isn't likely to talk anytime soon made me cry, as it described him perfectly. And that's hard for moms to hear when you tell them. And I guess it was easier for us to say that on the podcast because we weren't sitting in her living room saying,
right.
You know, and that is a little harder to say to a mom who's right there because you feel like you're going to hurt her feelings. But sometimes unless we really put it that bluntly, moms don't understand how important that social connection is and dismiss a child's aloofness or isolation as just being part of his personality or his temperament, or that he's bored with what we're trying to get him to do, or he's not, you know, it's not interesting to him. He's thinking about something totally different. And so they don't realize how important that social piece is, and that's where language really begins, and that's where we begin addressing any kind of communication problem, is by making sure that a child has a fairly well-established social response when someone tries to engage him. And by that I mean play with him or talk to him or just be around him so that he knows that someone is there. And more importantly, he wants to be with them and be in their presence. And so, again, I think it was probably easier for us to say on the podcast than maybe even in person, even with moms who are on our own caseloads that we see week after week. Excuse me, I had a little burp there. Okay.
Like, are you waiting for me to say something?
No, I'm trying not to burp audibly.
Sorry, your sweet southern approach always helps to soften that blow, I think. You always have a really nice way of saying those things that are difficult, but doing it in a loving, supportive, Southern sort of a way, and the Northern in me certainly struggles with that on a regular basis, trying to put it in a way that's direct and yet still sensitive to, it's not that I think I'm insensitive, I'm not always necessarily great at the wordage and the approach and the, you know, how to make it so that it's not so horrible for a parent to hear, but yet still they are hearing the message. So
I'm still
right,
working
on that.
Well, and I think a lot of therapists want to say it, and they miss the mark a little bit with either being too direct and too blunt, or this is what I think happens a lot, they try to gloss over it so a mom is never quite really sure what they're saying.
Right.
And so then mom doesn't really get it. And I think that balance is really, really hard to achieve. And I always talk about you have to say these things about social skills, and sometimes your voice is shaking, and if someone were looking at your knuckles, you are holding on to your test manual or your you know, scheduling book or a toy. If you looked, always think, oh, she's going to see my white knuckles. She's going to notice that my voice is shaky and that I can't really, you know. And I think, oh, my goodness, does she realize I'm as nervous and upset about telling her this as she is about hearing it? And, again, I'm not trying to equate those two. It's very different to be talking about a child professionally and then to be the parent of that child. But sometimes therapists have a really hard time saying what parents need to hear. And, again, in a nurturing, loving, I care about you, we're in this together kind of way. So it's hard, and I think all of us struggle with that.
Yeah.
With how to say it and when to say it and have you said too much? Have you not said enough? You know, anytime a mom cries during therapy, I think, oh, no. You know, but sometimes you have to have that moment so that they can work through that. And, again, I think lots of parents put on a really brave face and don't really get to acknowledge how upset they are or how cheated they feel or anything with anybody, because even with their own parents, they might be trying to really kind of downplay things and not be as worried. They may not even be able to share with their friends how concerned they are about their child. For again, they don't, you know, they don't want anybody to think their baby's weird or that there is delayed or it's as significant an issue as it maybe is. And I see that a lot where parents, where a mom will have a really kind of big breakdown sometimes in sessions because she hasn't gotten to really talk to anybody else about it.
Right.
And sometimes we play that kind of therapist too, don't you think?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, and I totally get it, as do you, and I'm sure 99% of all therapists. You know, it's very difficult to come to terms with something pretty significant is going on, and, you know, my child isn't the perfect child that I had always imagined, and now where do we go from here? And, you know, parents are, you know, we all want perfect kids, and somehow it's a little easier to accept my child isn't, he's a late talker, as opposed
right.
to, no, this may be part of a bigger, more significant issue, and that's, you know, kind of at the heart of what makes these conversations difficult oftentimes, you know. Sometimes
right.
the late talker talk is the easiest one we give, if it is just
right.
in fact a late talker. It's that one that involves all those other issues that oftentimes
right.
parents don't really even recognize are issues. So,
or you might think about it in the middle of the night when you're up by yourself, but that's it. You know, it's your
mm-hmm.
worst fear.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do think on this show it's a little easier to talk about these things sometimes because we're still kind of being hypothetical and not really talking about one particular child, and we're certainly not looking a mom in the face as we're saying it. So anyway, back to the letter. She says, then she says, I went through a grueling 2 to 3 weeks with them doing as close to 3 hours or more play therapy a day. Whoa, she's awesome, don't you think?
Yeah.
Twins playing 3 hours a day, 2 to 3 weeks. And she said, I tried everything in your book, and he, and she's talking about her little boy that was most significantly delayed, only responded to two games. One was high five, and the other was the up, up, down game. And everybody knows what high five is, you know, give me five. The other game that she's talking about is a game that I play a lot with kids, and you put them on your lap in front of you, and you lift your knees, and you say up, 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 and then once you get them up there, then you wait and create anticipation, and then you say down, and you bring your legs quickly back to the floor so that the kid gets a little bump, you know, like a little fall. And lots of toddlers think that is a funny, funny game. And the best part about that is they have to stay with you to play again. You know, you're holding their hands. They're right in your face. And, again, most of the time you're doing something that you've not done before, so it's pretty novel. And so she said he responded to that game. She said nothing else remotely got his attention. So she's trying and trying and trying, and those were the two things that worked. She said, goes on to say, then one day he started running to the far end of the garden and looking at me and squeaking. He was, and then she says, he was initiating a game. She says she ran after him and threw him in the air. We did this over and over until I was almost crawling. Can't you just see her?
Or
I can
myself.
Empathize with that.
Yeah.
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 With that, oh, my gosh, I don't think I can throw him one more time. You know, I didn't have as many problems with that in my 30s as I am in my mid-40s with that, I tell you.
Yeah.
And she says, but I carried on and got him to say Ma before I would chase him, and then finally Mama. And she says, we had a word. After that, things just took off. Isn't that the sweetest story?
Yeah.
So she worked and worked to get that and, you know, ran herself crazy that day, and she was able to get him to say Ma and Mama and work that into the game, which I talk a lot about. And the book she's talking about is Teach Me to Play With You, if anyone's listening and not sure what that is. And that's all that stuff is on my website at teachmetotalk.com. And then she goes on to say, he's just had his second birthday and has easily in excess of 50 words, maybe 100. He can count to five if we model the words for him. He said, where's Scoop the other day? And Scoop is his favorite toy. I asked him this morning, where do we put jam? And he said, on toast. And then Mom says, I can sing nursery rhymes or read stories, and if I miss a word deliberately and wait, he fills in the blank. And then she says, it is really and really in all caps amazing. Our speech therapist can't believe it, the complete U-turn he has done. His speech is almost normal for his age. We're now concentrating on him improving eye contact as he isn't great at this. She said, I started giving him omega-3 fish oils too. I don't know if this helped. And then she goes on to say her speech therapist wants to buy the book, blah, 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 blah. And then she says, I felt so lost when we knew he had a problem, and it was only you who told me how to fix him. Keep up the good work. I'm telling everybody about your website. And she said, Nathan's speech is now so good that
emotional?
We...
You sound like you might cry.
It's not that. It's that I'm really having indigestion. I took 4 or 5 Tums before the show. It's I keep burping. And it might have been the Coke that I chugged right before we got on the air. I'll have to make a note not to do that anymore. So, no, not emotional. I'm just having some digestive issues.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you're getting weepy on me. I'm like, ooh.
No, no. I mean, it's very sweet. Please don't think that I'm not touched, but it's not that. I'm trying not to burp where you can hear me. And then it says, Nathan's speech is so good now we stop using sign language again. I can't thank you enough. So that was an awesome follow-up letter. And I love how she identifies that she first had to make that connection and then give him a reason in a game to talk, and how that was the foundation for him. And once he learned, I've got to say something to get something that I want, it just seemed to move on after that. So I loved hearing that real-life success story. You can jump in and say anything you want to now, Kate.
I was trying to think what it was I wanted to say.
Well, I think that social games are really powerful for kids like this, and especially when you have, she said nothing else remotely got his attention. So he sounded like a kid who really wasn't into other people. He probably, again, just did his own thing when he played, didn't really respond when she tried just to narrate what he was doing or give him a direction. He probably looked like the kinds of kids that I call roamers, just kind of roamed around his house and maybe looked at this or looked at that or maybe even stayed pretty engrossed in something, but it wasn't very social. And kids absolutely have to be social before they learn how to talk. And sometimes as speech therapists and developmental interventionists, we don't say that as bluntly as we should to parents, and they don't make the connection that that's where we start. It's not really a teaching him to say a specific word in the very beginning. It's just in getting them to pay attention to us, to laugh with us, to stay with us, rather than us chasing them through their homes or almost begging them for attention, you know, to look at what we have or to look at what we're directing them to. And so social games do a really good job of giving a child a reason to stay with you and to learn how to participate and enjoy someone else's company, more so than, say, reading a book or even playing with a cool toy. Sometimes kids really aren't into toys at the beginning when we start with them in therapy. So I love this story, how those two simple games, it seems like she probably had to play them over and over and over because that's all he would respond to.
But a lot of times when you do finally get, and it sounds like she, you know, she called it grueling, 3 hours a day for a couple of weeks trying to figure out what it was that was going to make that connection with him. But once you do find something, it's not always as smooth a path as what it sounds like hers ended up being. But oftentimes
right.
it is that initial thing, game or interaction or, you know, exchange that you have with the child where you're beginning to see the twinkle in his eye and you're beginning to see, oh, he does like it. And you're thinking, finally, I got
yeah.
it. Because it really is a lot for us and certainly for parents, kind of a shot in the dark sometimes. You know, you don't know
yeah.
what it is. And children don't know to tell you, so you're trying this and you're trying that and you're trying this. And then when you finally get it, you know, okay, there's this. And then from there, it's a building game. What can I do to make this a bigger exchange? What can I do to tweak it just a little bit to improve his or change his response or extend the amount of time he's able to stay with me and wants to stay with me? And but at least you know you've got something to build on. And sometimes
right.
just getting that initial thing is not easy. So she persevered.
It's not
and,
easy.
No.
And you do feel uncomfortable in therapy, especially if you feel like a mom is sitting there, and I always use the analogy, she's got her arms crossed and is patting her foot, like, get on with it, lady.
Mm-hmm.
You're supposed to be good at fixing this. What you got? And
yeah.
I do feel that pressure and that uncomfortable feeling. And sometimes I think it's, especially with really, really hard kids, I almost... And most of the time I do this, I say to mom, see, this is hard for everybody to get his attention. It's hard, you know, I've done this for a long, long, long time now, and I've worked with, you know, literally thousands, you know, close to that, especially with my playgroup experiences with all the children that we had at any given time in our program. Lots and lots and lots of children, and I am still having a really hard time coming up with what works to keep him with me and what's fun enough and exciting enough and enticing enough. And sometimes parents get a little frustrated because they think, oh, no, my kid is really messed up. But a lot of times they feel like, phew, it isn't just me or – you know, a little bit of relief. Now, that's not to say that most of the time the mom isn't going, oh, my gosh, he's really bad if you can't fix him today. And you have to, you know, just go on with your whole explanation about what a long process this is and how it might be weeks or even longer before we start to really see what we can call measurable progress. And that's where pointing out the subtleties of progress and really talking to Mom about in a game like Up, Up, Down. You know, last week he stayed with me two times when we played that. Listen, today he stayed four times. We played that four times in a row before he wanted to get up. And, you know, that's a 100% improvement over last week. We've doubled the amount of time. And so you can talk about those things because parents don't know to measure it like that. And their measuring stick is often very different, and you have to redirect to how we're seeing progress. And again, some of that really involves it looking at the glass as half full rather than half empty. And it, but you still have to do it, and you have to point those things out, because for some children, progress will be that slow, and you just have to keep plugging away and keep going through those uncomfortable feelings during that session with, that didn't work, what else can I try? Okay, he liked this, so, you know, that's a really highly visual game, so what else do I have in my bag of tricks today that might also entice him? It means while you're driving to a kid's house that you think about what worked last week and give yourself some time to ponder over what you might, what else you might try. That's why our friendship, Kate, to me has been so special all these years, because I can call you and say, okay, I've got this kid, and last week he did this, and so what else do you think I should try? Help me think of something. I'm almost there. I've just got 10 minutes. And so you can talk about those kinds of things and talk about, well, I would try this. Or when one of us would have a really good visit with a really hard kid, we might say, oh, my gosh, listen to this crazy thing that I came up with today that really, really worked for this kid. And having someone to talk about that with, because, frankly, our husbands and children and friends who don't do what we do can take about, oh, about 5 minutes of that kind of conversation before they are done.
Yeah, they that's don't why I think find the show it is endlessly fascinating as we do, do they? They try to pretend that same interest, but, yeah, it's like, mm-hmm, that's fascinating, honey. But for
well,
some
that's
reason
why I
to
think
us,
show,
and obviously to other therapists, because there are actually therapists and a few moms who listen to us babble on about just this topic every week. But, you know, we've all been there, those of us who do this, and to have worked with those difficult kids, and it is so helpful to be able to troubleshoot with somebody who does essentially the same thing all day, and to know that you're not the only one who struggles with more difficult kids, you're not the only one who's scratching her head thinking, please, Lord, let this be a decent hour, you know, I mean, certainly not with all of our kids, but with some kids. You know, we're learning as we go. It doesn't seem to matter how many children you've seen or how long you've been doing it. Some kids are just inherently more of a challenge, and those are the kids that keep us earning our keep, because the easy, fun ones, and we have those too, which they're wonderful, but, you know, those are the easy, fun ones that you don't really have to worry about, or, you know, they just respond pretty quickly, and you think, woohoo, I'm good, you know, and then you go to your
that's
hard
one. That's a gift.
One and you think,
that's what that
yes,
is. That's a gift.
That's a gift. Mm-hmm. Then you go to the hard one, and you think, I guess I'm not quite as good as I thought, because I'm really having to work hard to figure out what I'm going to do to keep this child engaged, as, you know, to the best of his ability on any given day. So this mom managed to make that connection and bridge the gap between I can't even get his attention to how many months had gone by since from the point where she initially wrote May
until she sent this the beginning of September. So June, July, August, she had 3 months. And she said the first two, she did 2 to 3 weeks with close to 3 hours a day and got nothing, hardly anything. She got out of trying, and it seems like to me, she said, I tried everything in your book, and he only responded to two games. And that really is very telling. Sometimes we have that in therapy sessions with kids, too. You might try 10 or 12 different toys or activities, and one or two of those be a real winner. You know, we're sharing a kid like that right now that we both are working on, and it's the first time we've gotten to work on a kid together in a long time, so I'm just giddy about that, but he's pretty hard. And so when I'm thinking about this and saying all this about 10 or 12 different toys or activities, and two of them are a winner, and maybe three or four more of those are okay, and then the rest of the time is not pleasant for anybody. You know, we're really working, and it's really hard. And, again, I'm speaking from my own experience with him. You can talk about things if you want to with that. But, again, you know, you have to really kind of look at that as, okay, he loved the balloons. What is it about me blowing up that balloon repeatedly and him going to get it and then me saying that, 1, 2, 3, go again, what about that? What kept him really with me? And then you apply it and think, what else would that work with? With this same kid, he liked the Tupperware blocks, where we've talked about those forever. Those are those old blocks that they open and close, and I hide some kind of trinket in there. And with this particular day, I had farm animals in there, and I was hiding the farm animals in his little overall pants. And he thought that was hysterical when I would make him walk, 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 hide him in there, and then say, where is it? Where to go? Boo! You know, he thought that was great. And for a couple of weeks in a row, really laughed and thought that was funny. Other toys, he loved the flat ball, got a good response. But other things that we've talked about every week on the show, the same little toys, it's kind of a struggle to do lots of those toys for more than a time or two before he wanted to move on or be overly frustrated. And again, I feel like I'm pretty good at my job and know what works. But you do have kids that are hard, no matter how many other successes you've had or how long you've done it. Kids that you really, like you said, that keep you thinking and keep you earning your keep and keep you clinically sharp with what else can I try that will make him want to play with me longer today than he did last time. And so, again, I say that to be encouraging to moms or therapists who have those hard kids, because we all do eventually,
right,
just to keep going and keep analyzing and get a friend like Kate and I have so that you can talk about those things and share and come up with some different ideas. You did something with that little boy that I had not done. Do you want to talk about that? Say
the
yes.
The swinging.
Yes.
Yeah. Although I don't know. I haven't. I'm still figuring out how that's going to work well. I've seen him only twice now, so I'm still very much trying to figure out what our routine is going to look like and what's going to be effective. But the first session, he was tired. He'd been up all day and hadn't napped and had had therapy that morning, and then I came later in the afternoon.
You saw him in the afternoon, yeah.
He was tired. So he was a happy camper for much of the session, which I really, you know, feel terrible about when that's the case. I mean, I think I hate it as much as the child himself hates it, because I'm
right.
Thinking, I don't want you to be miserable, you know, even if he's not loving it. Crying
right.
And screaming and running from you is really not an ideal session in anyone's opinion. But that's pretty much how it had gone. I mean, we had moments of, oh, he kind of liked that, but then off he'd go frustrated or, you know, overstimulated or something desirable. So the end of the session, and the mom is great and really learning a lot herself and has done a great job trying to learn about sensory issues and has done a lot of stuff trying to figure out what's going to work for her little boy. But anyway, so I asked, had she ever done any swinging with him? And she looked at me like, swinging? You know, no, she'd done lots of sensory movement activities with him, which he really had grown to like already, but not swinging. And my concern with some of her sensory approaches were, he's a very high energy, gets kind of overstimulated easily, and he can do those things for very long periods. And I think sometimes that's the case with kids like that. You know, there's no bottom line for it, or they do it so much that they kind of hit the wall and are overstimulated
crash.
And have a meltdown. So anyway, so I said, well, have you tried swinging? No. And I said, oh, we just need a blanket or a throw or you know, little baby.
And you know, you're thinking, why hasn't Laura already done that? Why hasn't Laura done that? That's what you were thinking, weren't you?
No, I wasn't. I was thinking, oh my gosh, I've got to do something to redeem myself. That's what I was thinking. There's got to be something.
I'm just being silly. I'm just interjecting.
Something
that
I can
to
do that this child won't hate, okay? So maybe swinging will be it. And we got, she got out a baby blanket and we placed him in the blanket and she took two corners and I took the other two corners and we began to swing him, which he immediately, I will say, I hadn't really seen, I guess I'd seen little, very brief, maybe glances of he might not hate this, oh, maybe there's a little decent eye contact, but nothing
right.
like what came through with the swing. All of a sudden, he was sitting on this blanket, and he was looking at me, and his eyes were twinkling. And it was like, oh, you know, it was this, woohoo, this is it, this is the thing. And so we
always say
him
that's
and,
the, oh,
yes,
moment,
it
yeah.
was. So, and he, I always do wee when I swing kids early on if I'm hoping to take my name and take some.
Uh-oh. Are you there? Kate? I think we lost Kate. Are you still there?
No, wow.
Kate?
Laura?
Uh-oh.
Can you hear me?
Now I can hear you. Are you back?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Okay. Now I can hear you. Wow, that was weird. Are you on your cell phone?
No.
Okay, that was weird. You totally cut out when I started going, Kate, are you there? Okay. So.
Oh, I couldn't hear you doing that. I just heard a little cut off of your voice. Anyway. So we did the swinging, and he was doing the wee, and he even did it a few times on his own without us smiling wee. And then
he said it then, and this is a nonverbal little, well, he's verbal. He has lots of jargony, babbling, kind of almost self-stimulatory. We're not almost self-stimulatory. Self-stimulatory utterances, digga, 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 you know, those kinds of vocalizations. But for the most part, he doesn't really use words functionally.
No.
Even though we might hear them occasionally, his mom has built up quite a repertoire of social games with him, and he will imitate some words in that context. But for you to hear whee on the very first time that he's ever played that game, I think is amazing. And so he said that several times, and he even initiated it some spontaneously on his own.
Right.
That's what you're saying, right?
Right.
Yay!
Which was huge. But not to be Debbie Downer, but then this week I was hoping that I might be able to, and this is, you know, I'll just go ahead and tell a story on myself because, like I said, with hard kids, we're always trying to figure out what's going to work. And my hope was that, oh, this swinging, what a great thing to work into a session. And we can swing, and then we'll do a more focused, more functional play thing, and then we'll swing again. And the problem with what happened the next week was, he was kind of off. She started a new diet. I think he was probably kind of hungry. But, you know, with this guy, I think at this point we have to kind of expect it's not going to be easy. There seems to always be something. You know, he's just one of those kids who has lots of things going on, and he can be unhappy a fair amount of the time. And so, anyway, he was unhappy for whatever reason, and I was hoping that the swinging, and so I didn't do it initially or, you know, maybe halfway through the session. I thought, okay, he's getting, nothing much else is working. He's, you know, I'm kind of struggling with him. I think I'll work the swinging back in and see if I can't calm him with that and then get him to do something else. And then, but the problem was once we stopped the swinging, he really got upset, and it was like, okay, we're either going to swing him nonstop. I mean, he'd like stop for a minute, but once he realized it was really over, so I don't know. In a perfect world, I thought that was a great theory, and in reality, as far as working it into a session, I don't know. I mean, maybe once.
Well, I think once. And just because, I mean, and I'm just saying this just because I know that who exactly who you're talking about, I really think that you've had a couple of just kind of darned if you do, darned if you don't times that you've seen him, because the first day he was overtired, because he is a kid that probably still should take a nap, and you saw him, you know, afternoon after he had already had a therapy session, so he was already more tired than he normally would have been. And again,
right,
just now, we're just now all getting started with him, and so he's going from not having anything to having a really good team of therapists that we are all just dying to get our hands on him and help him, because we all have fallen in love with his sweet parents. And so he's gone from no services to a bunch of services. And so I think that he was naturally, he was so tired the first day. And then the second day you saw him again is after mom is doing a big dietary modification. And that was just, what, on day three of that. And I know on day three, when people say when they quit smoking, like that third or fourth day is awful. And I know when I started, when I've done crazy diet stuff in the past, like, you know, no carbs or whatever fad diet I was trying to do, an all soup diet or whatever, that's hard after several days.
That's
and
me,
I'm an adult with a pretty good, a pretty good regulatory system for the most part.
Right.
And so I can just imagine how nonverbal little guy felt.
Right.
So I think you've just had two sessions where timing-wise, it hasn't been so great. And I can say that because I know that kid, and I know you, and I know, you know, so I think this, I think that's still a good theory, the whole move, sit, move, sit. I still think that will, I think the swinging is great, and I think I'm going to do this next week when I see him. I think that's a great plan.
Well, I don't know. Maybe if he'd been in a better place when I started, you know, it is. I'm still very much trying to figure out what it is that's going to be our thing and our connection. And, you know, I want every child I see to be positive, both for the child and for the mom. And so far, I have to frankly say, I don't think we're there, and that bothers me, but heaven knows I will do everything I can to,
it's only,
you know,
the second time you've seen him.
And I
so
know.
Lots
and
of times
you don't
with
have
those
to make
kids.
Me feel better, I promise.
Yes,
but,
I do.
Yeah.
No, but seriously, sometimes with these kinds of kids, and I'm saying this from personal experience, it takes a good couple of months. And that would be for a kid who might not, you know, who might be even less significantly affected than our little guy. Sometimes
right.
it really takes 2 or 3 months to kind of get a stride with a kid. And like you
right.
said before, sometimes with these hard kids, even if you get it one time, but just because of how their sensory systems are set up, the next week, if something has happened, if they're sick, if they're overtired, if they have an, you know, anything, you know, they have molars coming in, you know, and I hate it when we blame stuff on teething, because I think that, boy, that gets the brunt of every excuse in the world when you're when you're in early intervention. But you know what I mean? Those kids are
right.
even more significantly affected than
they
just
seem to be
a little
very
thing.
Very sensitive, yes, to
yeah.
any little change. And sometimes I think
right.
they must be growing. They must, I mean, it can be
yeah.
nothing obvious at all, and they just
right.
seem off. And then
right.
maybe you get lucky the next week and you think, oh, hey, that was great. What
that
we like
better.
To see is that you've established some kind of positive pattern where you kind of
right.
are beginning to understand them, and they're kind of beginning to understand you, and at least you have some things that work. And I'm just not there with him, and I hope that I get there with him quickly. But, yeah, we'll see. I'll be interested to hear how it goes with you trying to do the swinging. You know,
we'll see.
It may work, and
I'm
it may be that he just likes it so much that anything
that,
you do.
Yeah.
Right. And there are
right,
certainly
that he can't
those
get
kids.
The saturation point. Yeah.
Right.
And so we'll have to see how to modify that. But thank goodness we have each other that we can talk about this and work together. And that was my point about some about therapists developing relationships with other therapists, so that you can talk about it and work through it, and not feel like you're, you know, the lone man in a rowboat in the middle of the Pacific Ocean here. That
right.
you've got, you know, some other ideas and things. So, and if you don't have a friend like that, email Kate and me, and we'll do the stuff on the show. We enjoy talking about other people's clinical challenges almost as much as our own, don't we?
Sure.
But it
Let's
is nice
about
when we
heart.
Know the kid.
We can commiserate together.
Yeah. But anyway, that was. I love that you shared that story, because he was a he's a hard kid. But you had a good success, and it wasn't perfect the next week. But that's not to say that we won't be able to build on some of that stuff, too. And his mother, again, has just been so great. But she's got lots of great social routines that she's really established with him, and he is saying some words in there. And they are all really movement sensory-based. She does things with him that I'm not even going to attempt to do, because she's 20 years younger than me, and because she has really, really worked those in. And I think, I don't know that I need to interject myself into that routine, because it's working so nicely between him and his mom. We're going to have to get our own things, like you
right.
said, your own kind of ebb, that back and forth flow. And we'll see how it goes. But I'm glad that you shared that experience, because I do think that sometimes when people get, like, and people tell me at conferences, they'll say, I really like that you showed the therapy footage of a little boy that was crying under the slide, and you looked like, oh my gosh, what am I going to do now?
Yeah.
We all have those moments. We all do. And they may follow a week where the kid's been great, or where you've seen three kids earlier in that day who've done great, and then your two or three afternoon kids bomb. I mean, that's just part of this job. So I think it almost is better. Not better, but it really helps other people to share even struggles, especially when they listen to us blab on and on week after week about what you should do this and you should do that and you should do this. So that when we share those things where we're going, well, let me tell you, this kid is hard.
Yeah.
It just makes it more real and more like, oh, my gosh, you really do work and have the same experience that I have. So.
Right.
Thank you for sharing that.
We'll have to update. Hopefully in a month or two, I can say, listen to how well my hour with our little friend went, because I'm really hoping I get there. I mean, that's what we want with all of our kids, and it's hard when
right.
it's not immediate or automatic, and, you know, some of them aren't. That's just, if it weren't an issue, we wouldn't be seeing them. So,
right,
you know.
And that's why we're there, and that's, you know, that's just part of it. All right, let's switch gears. I want to end the podcast. We have about 8-9 more minutes with this funny story, or I think it's funny. I don't know, Kate. Did you think that was funny?
I thought it was funny. Yes.
Okay. All right. This is from a speech pathologist that I have just made friends with online. She contacted me really early when I got the website up. She was one of the first people to email me and say, hey, I do your job too, but I'm in California, and oh my gosh. And we just have developed this online friendship through email and Facebook. And so she sent this. She says that she's in a group, and this was a discussion on a board. It's what to wear in private practice came up. And she said, most of the people who do early intervention responded with some version of go with what's comfortable. And I would say that would be how I dress for work. I'm a jeans and sweater or jeans and T-shirt kind of girl. I don't really wear tennis shoes anymore, because that makes me feel like I'm, you know, wearing, look too much of like a, or I don't know, I try to wear cute shoes and a cute top and jeans, but boy, am I comfortable when I work. I do not particularly dress up. But that's not to say that I go with greasy hair and in sweatpants either. You know, there's kind of that happy medium, and I try to go with that.
Right.
But this is what this other person says. She says, and my friend is quoting this person, this advice that she gave to therapists. And she says, this speech pathologist says, my early career was university-based, and then it was school-based, but now I've been in private practice for 26 years in a very high socioeconomic area. Wear the nicest handbag and footwear that you can afford. Shoes can be resold, and they tell a lot about the wearer. I wear a cashmere twin set and pearls with a silk scarf over trousers or a skirt in the cooler weather. During warmer weather, I wear a crisp white blouse with pearls over trousers or a skirt. Dresses are also a large part of my wardrobe. And she says, yes, I do find my high-end clothes on sale or deep discounts. Following a diagnostic session, I overheard the father say to a mother, if she can afford that scarf, she must be good. And what kind of scarf is that, Kate? Hermes?
Hermes.
There you go.
I think that's not that I own one, but. I can't even
pronounce it, so there you go.
Dress
in a way that you're comfortable, yes, but you must keep in mind that your garments are perceived as part of your clinical competence. And then she goes on to advise, additional regular haircuts are a must. Since I use sign language for some of my clients, I also get a manicure with clear polish every 12 days. Old school, yes, but I may be on the floor with my youngest clients and at the bedside with my oldest. I just keep various lint brushes at the ready. And so my friend ends with, dang it, if I'd only known that that kind of scarf would make me a good therapist, dot, 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 dot. I hope that our friends that are in early intervention found that as humorous as I do, because I don't know that I would want to have on my best scarf the bodily fluids that we deal with in any kind of normal day. Or, you know, we have drooly friends and we have a lot of, pardon the word, snot at this time of year to deal with. And just, I can't imagine. You know, I do think that there's a difference in looking like you came to work and looking like you rolled out of bed. And I know you kind of, that's a little pet peeve of yours, Kate. You're always put together and always dressed. And I've heard more than one person say, boy, that Kate, she always looks great. She's so pulled together. I want to look like her when I grow up. You know, that's your reputation in our town. But you're not wearing dresses and heels into sessions.
No. I'm always very casual. Jeans, capri pants in the summer, T-shirts, nothing fancy at all. Nothing I have to dry clean because pretty much if I wear it for work, it's going in the laundry.
Yeah.
But, you know.
We might get, I routinely might look down and I've written on my pants instead of, you know, kind of hit trying to as I'm taking data. When I'm trying to write and play with my left hand and write with my right hand, sometimes I've done that. Hairspray takes that out really well, by the way, if anyone needs laundry hints today. But I just thought this was funny, and I know that my friend thought that I would think it was funny because she listens to the podcast all the time, and she just knows our life in early intervention. Some homes that we go into might have a different kind of standard of cleaning than we would at home. And so if you're not wearing jeans or kind of casual pants, you might have a hard time with that. So I just thought it was hysterical. And I wear jewelry all the time. I mean, I wear those little cheapy bracelets. That's kind of my thing. And a lot of moms will give that to me as a present because they know that I do that. But I wear those because I think kids are so attracted to that. And a lot of times a kid will want to sit in my lap and look at my bracelet. And that's kind of my initial hook with a kid. I can't imagine wearing real pearls in a therapy session. Since our little friends have a tendency to want to explore, sometimes my loopy earrings, kids will try to, you know, I think that they think sparkly, shiny, and will reach up and grab one of those. I have to be a little more careful about that. And some, when I've had kids in the past that have been hair pullers, I always have a clip in the car so I can put my hair in a clippy before I go in so that that's not a problem. But I thought that was a little over the top, and it's just a little comic relief to our friends to
do
the same job that we do.
All the skirts and dresses for early intervention, because I find myself, you know, chasing after kids, crawling on the floor in front of them or in back of them. You know, I sit Indian style. I've done a few skirts over the years, particularly if I'm seeing like one or two kids in a day and I think, I'm sick of my jean capris. I'm going to look cute today and I'll wear a skirt. And usually it's
really a hassle, and I think I'm not doing this anytime again soon because just, you know, you're not comfortable and you can't move as well. So, but
well,
obviously
even with
she
some...
has a very high-end clientele. So.
Well, obviously so. And I see lots of, you know, for Louisville, lots of doctors' kids and therapist kids and attorneys' kids and things like that. And usually with me, even I have to really kind of think about my pants and, you know, how pants are now. You know, if I'm going to flash somebody when I'm bending over, if my shirt's not long enough or something like that. So I can't imagine having to feel like that my professional competence depended on designer footwear and handbags. And I don't ever really take purses and visits with me because I think my little friends would want to dig in my purse, and goodness knows we don't need that to happen with what you might find in there. So
I don't either. I don't ever take in my purse. I don't. Just one more thing to, like you said, have them want to get into, and that's not going to be part of my session anytime soon. So
yeah.
I don't do the purse thing, but oh, well, Laura, we'll see. Might have to upgrade my clothes so that I get more respect. We'll see if it works. I don't think it probably will.
I'm not thinking so. I think I'm going to stay with the jeans and the sweaters and the T-shirts and that kind of thing. I think I'm going with what works for me. And
right.
I don't know, my families might be shocked if I waltzed in like that. So I think that it is important, though, to, well, never mind. I'm not even going to say all that. That goes without saying. So I just thought I would share that as kind of a little comic thing. I hope that moms might not have appreciated that, but I think other therapists will get a chuckle out of that, so since we thought that was funny.
Yeah. Sometimes just the shower and the ponytail is, you know, pretty good.
You never go somewhere with just a shower and a ponytail. You are always fixed. You always look great. You're always so pulled together. I'm not kidding. Lots of people say that about, oh, Kate's clothes, everything's so pretty. So,
and I think
you don't
I'm
just
so
do the
casual,
shower and the ponytail.
I really do, but I do a shower and a ponytail many, many, many days. I mean,
along with your
more,
makeup
but...
and your jewelry and pulled together outfits, tell the truth. So there you go.
Makeup and jewelry, the pulled-together outfits I'm not necessarily buying, but I am rather a shopaholic, so I guess I do wear some of it for work. Mostly I just hang it in a closet, actually. But that's a different show.
Yeah, there you go. Next week we'll share organizing tips, okay?
Yeah, not
all
me.
Right.
Yeah,
I think
that would definitely leave me high and dry.
Too. All right, that does it for this week. I hope you'll tune in next week. We would absolutely love to hear your emails, your questions. More than that, we'd love a live caller. So think of something that Kate and I can mull over for next week's show, and we'd love to hear it. Or if you have any cool links to send me, I always love to share those on the Facebook page. So thanks so much. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Laura. Bye.
Bye.